The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities,
celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Hi, it's Patrick here.
Nina too.
I want you to guess a language.
Oh, I'm so bad at this game.
Okay, here goes.
I don't know. Some language spoken in Papua New Guinea? I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, it's completely unfair for me to ask. I didn't even know this language existed until recently.
Totally unfair.
But I'm going to give you another language to guess. Here goes.
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe it could be like a native language, like a Native American language.
That one is Navajo. Okay,
oh,
so,
yes!
You know, that's much less obscure than the first one. The first one is a language that is spoken by very few people in Siberia. It's called Ket, K-E-T. And these two languages, Ket and Navajo, they have something in common, according to some linguists, which is kind of extraordinary because, you know, Ket is spoken in Siberia and
right.
Navajo is spoken thousands and thousands of miles away
right.
in the American Southwest.
So how are they similar?
We're going to get into that, I promise. But first, I want to ask you why they may be similar. Why do you think?
Why do I think? Maybe it has to do with, you know, isn't there that theory about the Bering land bridge? Is it that people thousands of years ago, like, would walk from one across the ocean and then walk down to North America or down into the Americas? Is that the reason, like, connecting Siberia to the Americas?
Right. Before the Bering Strait, there was the Bering Land Bridge. And,
uh-huh.
and these migrations, they theoretically took place starting about 15,000 years ago until about 13,000 years ago, when the two continents separated and the land bridge no longer existed. And there is evidence of this. There's genetic evidence
uh-huh.
between the two sets of people, similarities between early Siberian tribes and later American tribes. Also, artifacts like near identical spearheads found in both places, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's evidence.
Okay, so that might be one of the reasons why this language spoken in Siberia today is related to Navajo spoken in the U.S. today.
Right. Except that evolutionary linguists, they don't believe that links between two languages can survive for more than 8,000 to 10,000 years. So that puts it out of the window.
and you're saying that these migrations took place long before 8,000 to 10,000 years. You're
right.
saying, was it 13,000 between 15,000 and 13,000 years
yeah.
ago? So the languages themselves should, according to these evolutionary linguists, no longer be connected in a sort of really knowable, discernible way.
Right.
But
there is a new theory. There's always a new theory.
Always is a new theory.
And there's a new timeline for the migration.
Much sooner.
Which allows for the connections between the Siberian language and the American language. And it means that this connection really might be real.
Oh, wow.
I am going to hand it over now to Alina Simone, who's been checking all of this out and can explain everything. Here she is.
In today's clickable, searchable, drone-mapped world, it's hard to imagine there are still people who are almost impossible to reach. People whose stories you can't get via Skype, that you have to travel for, suffer for even. But it took Edward Vida, a historical linguist at Western Washington University, 10 years of study and planning to reach the homeland of the Ket.
To get to the Ket areas in central Siberia, I had to go through about 20 time zones. And that took 7 airplanes, 3 trains, and a 4.5-hour helicopter ride. And the helicopter that brought me there only comes to the village for a half an hour every week. So when you're in this village, Kellogg, on the Yeligui River, you really do feel like you're at the end of the world.
But it was only here at the end of the world that Vida had the chance to unravel the enigma of Ket, a native language with only a handful of fluent speakers left among a tribe of 1,200. And this was a language so complicated and unusual, It left linguists grasping for comparisons.
Linguists for the past 300 years have tried to link Kett with Sumerian, with Basque, with languages of the Caucasus Mountains, with languages of Southeast or East Asia, and that had not really panned out as any kind of a proven relationship. So Kett was very much a mystery.
This is Kett you're hearing. It's a native speaker telling a fairy tale called Cuckoo. Among the dozens of indigenous groups spread throughout Siberia, the Kett were always considered different. They were hunter-gatherers, unlike the native people surrounding them, who were all reindeer cattle breeders. And their looks set them apart, too.
Kett people were physically different, and they resembled pictures of Native American people.
Edward Vida was by no means the first person to notice this. As far back as 300 years ago, explorers who had contact with both groups were struck by the similarity of their appearance and the fact that both were hunter-gatherers. And so this intriguing theory began to circulate.
That the Kett were simply distant cousins of Native Americans who had not ever gone over Bering Strait. They had stayed in North Asia.
The idea of a language link between Kett and some Native American languages also isn't new. It was first floated in 1923 by Italian linguist Alfredo Trombetti, mostly on the basis of a single look-alike word.
The native people of most of northwestern North America, the Athabascan peoples, call themselves Dene or Dene, depending on the different language, and that means the people. And the Kett people call themselves Dieng. And it sounded so similar.
As theories go, this was a bombshell. There might be a living linguistic link between native peoples on either side of the Bering Strait. But the presence of one similar word, even a really important word, wasn't enough to prove anything. And after that, the trail pretty much ran cold. Since the Kett were such a remote tribe, their language hadn't been thoroughly mapped. Plus, for decades, the Cold War made it impossible for scholars from the Soviet Union to access enough information about Athabascan languages to see whether this shared word Trombetti found was a fluke or proof of a deeper relationship. When the Iron Curtain came down, a bonanza of material suddenly became available to linguists on both sides. Vida began studying Kett in the 90s, and he soon noticed a discrepancy. Some scholars thought Kett was a tonal language, like Chinese, and some thought it wasn't.
This fascinated me because in North Asia, there were no tonal languages at all. And if Kett was a tonal language, it would be the only one within a few thousand miles in any direction. And I knew there were tonal languages in native North America. Athabascan languages were tonal.
Another clue. Enough for Vida to expand the scope of his inquiry. Remember, originally he'd only set out to study the origin of Kett. Now he was excited about the suggestion that Kett may actually be related to some Native American languages. He knew he would have to conduct fieldwork with the Kett and learn how to speak Kett. That's what sent him on his insanely complicated journey to the heart of Siberia.
No linguist from America, to my knowledge, had ever met any Kett people or heard the Kett language spoken. The areas where the Kett people live were off limits to foreigners from the mid-1920s to about the year 2000.
It was a pretty big deal for both Vida and the Kett people the day he showed up.
The Kett people felt that I must be from one of the other villages in this region of Siberia because I spoke completely fluent Russian on the one hand, and I also knew quite a bit of Kett. And even people that are Kets that are my age or younger, a lot of them don't really know Kett. So they didn't really accept that I was a foreigner. I sometimes told that I was from America, but some people thought that was maybe just another village somewhere out there.
Vida discovered Kett did have tones, like some Athabascan languages. Navajo, for example. He started finding systematic similarities between the two languages, like how you say the word head.
In modern Kett, one of the words for head is tui. And in the language of the Athabascan peoples, depending on the dialect, it's something like tsi. In Navajo, it's tsi. And so this was something that if you have enough of these words and they have systematic correspondences between the sounds, it's something that can't be a coincidence.
Perhaps more importantly, Vida also found systematic dissimilarities. Ket uses a T sound at the beginning of some words, whereas in the Athabaskan languages, you'd have a ts.
So the difference between t and ts is systematic in a number of words. And the same thing is true of tones and of vowels. And once you get these kinds of interlocking system of corresponding dissimilarities, you're starting to get the very beginnings of what is considered to be proof or evidence of language relatedness in history.
When Vida got back to the States, he began to share his findings with elders of various Athabaskan tribes. He didn't know what to expect.
I decided to ask the elders what the Ket word that I was saying meant. And in most of the cases, they actually got it right. They actually guessed it right. And I thought that was striking.
Vida had a harder time convincing some linguists. The Ket and Navajo word for canoe or boat, for example, was among those Vida discovered were similar. But linguist George Starosin at the Russian State University for the Humanities thinks the relationship between these two languages is more circuitous and circumstantial.
This is the kind of argument that makes a serious psychological impression on people, right? If they share the same word for both, that's so wonderful, that's so great. That is, unfortunately, something that I very, very strongly doubt. Usually in languages, these terms are not stable. These words do not live long in the language. They tend to be quickly replaced by other words. Because, you know, boats change, sometimes boats go out of usage, they're replaced with other boats. And a word for boat that is being preserved in a language for 10,000 years is something completely unrealistic to me.
This huge time gap worried Vida as well. Very few linguists, himself included, believe a language connection could endure more than 6,000 to 8,000 years. But the evidence was convincing, and many linguists, including George Starosin, agreed there appeared to be some kind of linguistic relationship between Athabaskan speakers and the Ket, which is why it came as a surprise in 2014, when a team of geneticists decided to see whether Ket and Athabaskan people shared common DNA, and found nothing. Well, nothing except genetic ties linking all native peoples, dating back to the middle of the last ice age. And so I asked Edward how he felt about this finding.
I really didn't have an answer to that. It was a mystery.
Another mystery. This was supposed to be the end of the story. But recently, a group of researchers ran that same genetic data through a finer-grained analysis.
And we've actually found that there is a clear signal of Siberian ancestry in Athabaskan speakers and not in other Native Americans.
This is Pavel Flagantov of the University of Ostrava, who worked on this research with the renowned Max Planck Institute. The connection they found isn't to the Ket specifically, but to the larger body of Siberian natives to which the Ket belong. Still, Flagantov suggests the migration from Siberia to North America may have taken place more recently than previously believed.
We are actually able to date that migration, and the date it agrees with what we know about archaeological cultures in Siberia and in America. So that migration happened around 5,000 years ago.
Which means the Ket and Athabaskans may be related not via the well-known Bering Land Bridge crossing, but through a much later movement. 5,000 years is within the time period scholars believe that languages can maintain a connection. This research hasn't yet been peer-reviewed, but one thing we do know is that Vida conducted his fieldwork just in time. Today, there are no fluent speakers of Ket left.
Alina Simone. We have photos of the Ket village Edward Vida visited, of him too with some of the people there he met. They're at pri.org/language.
We're also on Facebook. You can contact us there, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at LingoPod.
Today's episode was mixed by Tina Toby. Thanks also to Jonathan Dyer, Kathy Merritt, Andrew Sussman, and Robin Moore.
And don't forget to leave us a review at iTunes or what is now being called Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. or Stitcher or Pocket Cast or whatever podcatcher that you listen to The World in Words. We'd really appreciate it.
Hey, Nina, we didn't sing today.
Thank God.
Thanks for listening today, and we'll be back soon.
The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities,
celebrating 50 years of excellence.